Welcome back, everyone, to an episode of Coffee and Christ.
Good morning.
Well, it's been a little bit, I will be honest, since we've been in the studio again. We actually had like a computer change, so we had to do a little bit of configuring. And
out with the old, in with the new.
Right. And so like the first week we came, you know, Dylan has a new computer, and we were like, all right, let's do this thing. We never got to it. We had to like fix a bunch of stuff, and then it was church time, and you know. So we got it fixed though. What happened last week? We were just busy.
Yeah, I think it was just I worked right up until 6 and then went to church.
Oh, right.
And then week before that,
I think that was the computer issue.
I think we had issues, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you what, if you have been in the South for the last 2 weeks, is it no? Maybe just 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's been cold. It's been a little snowy. It's been like highs 20, like low, like high 20, low like teens. It's been that kind of weeks. And for people who work in the mechanical field, they have been busy. So a lot of late hours for Dylan over there and some service techs and so it's been busy a couple of weeks, so but we're back now. It is now got back in, up into the 50s and like low's not even in the freezing anymore, so it's great. It's really mild right now, so we're able to be back and get started. You know, this week, boy, do we have a word for you. I don't know if we'll even get done this week. I'm not sure how far we'll get. We might. We could pick this word out and do a whole series about it. You know, like it's one of those words. This week we are doing the word love, relearning it. In Hebrew, it's pronounced ahava, A-H-A-V-A-H. That's like the transliterated. And it's, this word is very broad. Very, you know, there are other ways of saying love in the Hebrew Bible. It's there's hesed, which is loyal love, which I have on our list that we might touch later on, but that's a form of it. But really, the base of it is it teaches us qualities that are important to real love, you know, the concept of real love. And I really enjoyed the study because I to be honest, I didn't even get done with everything. We kind of did I sticked in the Old Testament, Dylan went to the New Testament kind of deal. So what makes this word so interesting to study is because in the English language, this word is just messy. It's not a great word, to be honest, you know, cause I can love coffee, you know, I can also love Star Wars, you know, or insert a movie. I love The Office, all those things. But I can also love my mom and use the same word for all three of those scenarios. But if I mean the same thing, the same form of love for all those scenarios, you know, my mom's probably not going to feel great because now she's compared to coffee and Star Wars, you know. So the word love in the English language is just messy. You know, most other languages have multiple words for love, but, you know, the English just has one. So it makes for a kind of a relearning process when we take it back to the biblical word because, you know, it's all different there. It's and for us, it's just one word. So, you know, in the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament, though, ahava most basically refers to affection, care for someone or show care to someone. You know, some examples in the Old Testament is Abraham. He loved his son Isaac in Genesis. You know, that's a parental love. In 2 Samuel, Jonathan showed love to his friend David. That would be considered a brotherly love. In 1 Kings chapter 5, the king of Tyre, Hiram, love David because they had good relationships. So it's a, and that doesn't mean he, if we read it in English terms that, you know, the king of Tyre loves David, you know, no, that's not what that means. It means it's a political alliance. You know, it's a political love. They have a good relationship. And these are all different kinds of affection, but use that word ahava. Now this is really kind of helps grasp the word when it's used to or in the sense with God in the equation. You know, in Deuteronomy chapter 7, you know, Moses is, this is after the generation died in the wilderness. We learned that from Numbers, and we've gone to the next generation, the kids of that one who didn't want to go into the land of Canaan, you know, after Joshua and Caleb said, let's go do it, and the other said no. So what we have here in Deuteronomy 7, verse 7 through 8, Moses is telling the Israelite people, he says, it was not because you were more in number than any other people that the Lord set his love on you and chose you, for you were the fewest of all people. But it is because the Lord loves you and is keeping the oath that he swore to your fathers, that the Lord has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So what Moses is saying is God doesn't love the Israelites in this case because the Israelites earned it, or that they were deserving of God showing love to them by rescuing them out of slavery, out of Egypt. But it's simply God's character that he loves because he is love. You know, that motivates verses. I hit my mic right there. It motivates verses like in Jeremiah. Jeremiah is a great book. It says turned one page too far. It says in Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 3, it says, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have continued my faithfulness to you. You know, God's love, according to Jeremiah, has no end because it has no beginning. It's everlasting. It's simply just a fact, an eternal fact. You know, however, since God is love, you know, it's his character. It doesn't mean it's God's responsibility. You know, I have responsibilities at work that I can choose to do, but there's some stuff that I just do that maybe fall out of my responsibility. And I do that because, I mean, you could call it love, I guess, but just because I can help, you know, maybe Dylan out or Mike or someone else in our field. If a service tech needs me, it's out of my realm, but if I can go help, that's it. It's the same thing with God. You know, it's his character. God is love, but that doesn't mean that it's his responsibility. He does not have to love, but it's because God genuinely feels and experiences love. You know, that's why the prophet Hosea compares God's love for his people to a husband's love for his wife, or to a parent showing love to their child. You know, and it doesn't, at the same time, you know, like I said, the word love in the English language makes this really hard to really dissect sometimes. But, you know, at the same time, it doesn't mean God's love is just a feeling, you know, just something that he feels and that's what he does. No, most of the time, it's more than a feeling. It's an action. It's a commitment. It's something that God chooses to do when he, to be honest, doesn't have to, but chooses to do anyway. Again, in another verse in Deuteronomy chapter 4, this is before what we just read, Moses says in verse 37, 37, it says, and because he loved, he being God, your father, and chose their offering, offspring after them and brought you out of Egypt with his own presence by his great power. And then the verse continues on. But God's love isn't just a way of thinking. It's something that he does because he chooses to do that. He chooses to love us over and over and over again. He doesn't have to, but he chooses to. And it's actually a key mark of a Christian, you know, that we are to imitate God's ahava, imitate his love by showing love for others. And, you know, this is where kind of my study almost drops off is, you know, what better way to imitate and to learn how to do this than from Jesus himself? You know, when we get into the New Testament, it's from Aramaic to Greek. And so the word is agape. There's a couple other words that the Greek use for love. There's, I can't remember if it's Phila or Philadelphia. It can't be Philadelphia, can it? I know the city in America, Philadelphia, is known for, it's literally translated brotherly love, but I can't off the top of my head remember if it's Phila or Philadelphia. But, you know, when you get to this, you've likely heard Jesus in one of his more popular sayings in Mark chapter 12, verse 31, it says, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And there are other areas that's in the gospel. But what does he mean by love? It's very unclear. You know, going back to how I love steak, I love coffee, but I also love my mom. However, they're all different meanings. So what's Jesus saying? In that particular case, he's quoting the Old Testament, Leviticus 19, chapter 19, verse 18. And, you know, the word that he uses in Aramaic is rachma. And man, I don't know Aramaic at all, so that might have been really unfortunate to hear. So I apologize if you do. But, you know, when Jesus' followers were spreading the gospel around, they translated it into the word agape. And something that's fascinating that, you know, I'm going to turn over Dylan here in a second, is that back then, you know, there's no internet. There's no dictionary for the disciples who are writing out, and Paul, the apostle, who's writing out these letters or the gospel. There's no dictionary for them to turn to and be like, okay, so am I using the right word? You know, sometimes you have that feeling where you don't know what to describe something. You know, they might turn and, no, they didn't do that. They didn't have anything like that. So the followers of Jesus who wrote these New Testament letters or gospels, they couldn't learn the meaning of agape by looking it up. Instead, they had to look to the only example they had, and that was Jesus and his teachings of Jesus and his story and his life. And that kind of helped fashion what the concept of love is. It's really prominent in the Gospels, but man, Paul knows what love really is in his letters, and you can see, and that's where I'm going to turn it over to Dylan.
So, like Jackson said, love is it's a messy word. It's a word that people use a lot, and a lot of times misuse that word. But in 1 Corinthians, which this is the love passage, you're going to hear this passage at weddings, you're going to hear it, you know, I've heard it at funerals before, but let's read that. And I'm going to read verses 1 through 8 and not skip out on the first four. Actually, I may read through 13.
Read it all if you want.
Stay with me here, everybody. I may read the whole chapter. It says, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels but have not love, then I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledges, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irrational or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. When the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I responded like a child. But when I became a man, I gave up those things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. So now faith, hope, and love abide these three, but the greatest of these is love. So if you go back, and I'll reread verses 1, 2, and probably 1 and 2 for now. So if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mystery and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. So verses 1 and 2 are talking about this amazing person, right? You speak in tongues of men and of angels. He has prophetic powers. He understands all the mysteries and all the knowledge. He has more faith than anybody else. But if they don't have love, then none of that equates to anything. And that's a problem. This is not what my entire discussion today is about, but you run into that problem as Christians in the church, of these people who they think that they're leading people to Christ, and basically they're judging them and calling them out for wrongdoing, or judging a church never having even attended it before, or whatever, and they think they're doing good. They think they have these, you know, this amazing faith, and they understand everything. But if you don't come from a place of love when you share that, then you have nothing. You're wrong. And all you are is a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. When you think about a noise in the background that's really annoying, like today we were talking about at work, we have a fish. His name is Finnegan. I am Finnegan's father, but I'm not the best father. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. If it was up to me, Finnegan would be dead. But Mike loves Finnegan. Mike says he doesn't love him, but I know he does, because he feeds him every day. I haven't fed that fish, and I can't tell you how long. But I digress. But suddenly, for whatever reason, starting yesterday, Finnegan's fish tank started buzzing.
Loudly.
Like, that I had to turn music on so I didn't hear it. Like, just that constant little in the background. That's what this is talking about. It's talking about if you don't have love in your motivation, in your conversations, in the forefront of your mind, then you are as worthless as the noise in the background. It says you're nothing. So, like Jackson said, talking about love, you know, my New Year's resolution is I wanted to read more. And so of course, I'm getting married in September, but the guy that's doing our wedding sent Andrea and I a book to read. And so I've been reading the book, you know, at night, and I've kind of really enjoyed it.
What's the book?
The Five Love Languages.
Okay.
And there's certain things that I love. Like, I have a hankering, for whatever reason, sometimes for the Chinese buffet. I love Dr. Pepper. I enjoy looking at vehicles and driving and work, but that's not the love that we're talking about. Kind of like Jackson was referring to, oh, I love The Office. Oh, I love steak. Yeah, but I also love my mom. There's a different type of intention when it comes to loving physical things versus loving and caring about another human being. So that's when you get into verse 7, or really verse 4. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. So let's boil all this down to how we should act. Instead of reading all of that, you can simply say, I want to love people the way Christ loved people. And you think about interactions that he had in the New Testament, and you see love.
Yeah.
When he, even when he went to talk to somebody who was caught in sin, he wasn't there to, you know, make fun of them. He wasn't there to dog on them, to make them feel like crap. He was there to say, hey, I care about you so deeply that I don't want you dealing with this stuff. I don't want you meddling in these things. I don't want you around these certain people. And so many of us, and I'll say us because I'll include myself, we want to catch people in that because we want to have a glory trip for ourselves. We want to look at somebody else and say, you know what? You're a bad person. And I'm a good person. And now it just reminds me that I'm a good person and you're a bad person. And we walk away. That's not what love is. Are you patient? Are you kind? Do you envy people or do you boast about yourself? Are you arrogant? Are you rude? Now, I'm not talking about, we all have our moments, guys. Like, geez. But I'm talking about, in average, are you trying to be these things? Verse 7, love bears all things, it believes all things, it hopes all things, it endures all things. True love does all these things. It never ends. And then it goes down in verse 13, so now faith, hope, and love abide in these, all three of them. But if you had to pick the greatest, it's love. 1 John 4:8 says, whoever does not love doesn't know God. Now, we say this verse all the time, but that's powerful. Does not love, if you don't embody love, you don't know God. That's, now when you say you don't know somebody, that means you're separated. Like you think about strangers. I think I've mentioned this on here before. Like, I love a good mysterious person.
Mm.
Like somebody that doesn't overshare, somebody that's mysterious.
Mm.
Like, you don't know what they like. You don't know where they go.
Right.
They don't, you know, they don't say much. And they get in your car and you're just like, where do you go? What do you do? I don't know why I think that. I do. But like, you're on the interstate and you see somebody drive by in a car with out-of-state tags. You're like, where are you going? Are you moving?
Right.
Did you just break up with your long distance boyfriend or girlfriend and you're sad? Did you just win $1 million in the lottery? Are you a criminal? Like, you have all these things in your mind. Yeah. I do. But I'm just like, what are you?
That could be on the run, yeah.
And I love going on road trips because I like to be that mysterious person. And I guarantee you that nobody else thinks, like, I think I have an issue. But like, I like to be that mysterious person. Like, you don't know me. So here's the way I like to think about it. When this verse says, if you don't love and you don't know God, that means you are separated from Him. The same way these people are mysterious on the road and in these places when you meet strangers, you're separated from them. They are a stranger. You know nothing about them. And you can say all these things, but if you're thinking about yourself, then you are separated because God is love. He embodies love. And without Him, there is no love.
Right.
And so people put on this big show because I don't care how good of a person you are. If you don't care about people and care about their soul and their intentions and love them, then you don't know God. And that's sad.
Yeah.
Because when we embody Christ, whenever we're saved through baptism, there should be a change in you because God's love is the change. That's what makes Christians different. It's not about, you know, how much money you have or your job or anything. It's your mind should make a switch. And at that point, it's not about you. It's not about your intentions. It's not about anything. It's about God. And if we're going to be about God, then we're about love. Love is the difference between caring for somebody and using somebody to climb the rung of a ladder. Love makes our actions useful, right? Your spiritual gifts, useful. Great faith, acts of service, all these things would be nothing. Love involves unselfish service to others to show that it is evident that you care. In Mark chapter 12, it records Jesus saying, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. That's it. It stops there. Just kidding.
Just kidding.
And love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. Guys, as Christians, as follower of Christ, as followers, excuse me, of Christ, our love for others is a reflection of who God is. And it's rare because people just don't care about somebody else. And Jesus is teaching us, he's telling us, hey, listen, your love needs to be evident. It should magnify all of your other qualities. And that looks like a lot of different things. And that's what people, I think, get so discouraged because they're not a people person, or they're not an extrovert, or, you know, fill in the blank. But guys, love is different. Love looks different based on the gifts and the talents that you have. The way I show love to people and the way Jackson shows love to people may look completely different. But it's all about your mindset when you're doing whatever you're doing. Like Valentine's Day is coming up, and me and Andrea hate Valentine's Day. I think it's the worst holiday ever.
Yeah.
And she also thinks it's the worst holiday ever. And I love that about her. Man. Because it takes the pressure off. Perfect. You know, I just don't like it.
Perfect.
But I want to order her flowers for Valentine's Day. And she listens to the podcast, so I mean, oh well. But if I want to order flowers on Valentine's Day, the thought is what makes the difference. Am I ordering these flowers because I want her to have them on Valentine's Day and I don't want her to be mad?
Right.
If I'm doing it for that reason, for show, for any other reason besides genuine love, then don't waste your money.
Right.
Because it's wrong. God sees that and says, you know what? That wasn't made with the right intention. That decision wasn't made with the right intention. Or do I order Valentine's Day flowers to be sent to her because I want her in that moment to have joy? I want her to be happy. I want her to look at those and say, my fiance sent me those. That's the difference. If you're thinking about how somebody else is going to feel while you're doing it, and you want them to feel joy because you care about them, you know, they've been struggling, that's great. That's love. But if you're doing it just because, oh, well, I can put a checkbox by or a check mark in my column because I did something nice for Jackson, and now he owes something back to me. That's not right. That's not love. Love is completely no strings attached. I will do anything for you that you ask. And then you don't get taken advantage of. There's a line. But your heart is so pure that you say, you know what? I'll do anything I can for you because I care about you, because I love you. And that may mean having hard conversations. Hey, fill in the blank, you shouldn't be doing that. And if it's coming from a glory trip to say, hey, I just caught Jackson doing something he shouldn't do.
Yeah,
that's wrong. Don't even call him out on it because you're doing it for yourself. Love is a no strings attached. I want to give you a gift. And what they do with that gift is on them. But we give the gift of love because every day when we wake up, we're given the gift of love
yeah.
through Christ. He says, hey, I choose you. I want to have a relationship with you. I'm pursuing you. I love you. So my question is, what are you going to do with it? Do you just put it in a bag and hide it, get in your vehicle and go to work and just be mad?
Yeah.
Or are you going to take that gift that you have and say, you know what? I'm going to share it. I'm going to give it to this person. I'm going to give in, you know, intentionally, because I know they're having a rough day. I'm going to call and check on them. I'm going to send them a text to say that I care. I'm going to carry myself differently. That's what the love as Christians should embody is. I want to think different. I want to act different. I want to be different. Because Jesus in his ministry thought and acted differently than everyone else. Not saying you're going to be perfect. Not saying that you're going to embody all the things we talked about in 1 Corinthians 13. But that you try. You try to be different. You try to be patient. You try to be kind. You try not to be envious. You try not to boast. You're not, I mean, you're going to have those arrogant moments. Like, hey, I did that. Or you're going to have envy about something because you want whatever. But generally, you make the conscious decision to care above and beyond what somebody else asks you to. Because God expects that. He wants you to go the extra mile,
yeah.
Even if somebody's asking for one. So, and I made the, or I just said, a conscious decision. Guys, love is not something that comes naturally to us. It's not. Anger comes naturally to us. Deceitfulness comes naturally. Envious actions come naturally.
Selfishness.
Yeah. But Christ is saying, make the conscious decision to love in every situation. And that's easier said than done.
Right.
But
right.
That's my talk on love. I could talk for next week, too.
Yeah.
But that's where I'll stop.
Yeah, there's so much. I think you hit the nail on the head by, you know, knowing God and knowing about God. A little bit further down in the First John passage in 4, chapter 4, verse 19, it says, we love because he, being God, first loved us. And so that's, man, it's such a hard word to really break down. I mean, even Paul, it says something too, that even Paul, when he's talking about love, talks about, you know, like I said, he's looking at Jesus as an example, finds more things to describe what it's not than what it is. He says it's, you know, doesn't boast, not all that stuff, because it's actually easier to say what it's not than what it is, because it's such a powerful thing that will take a lifetime to get good at. But anywho, good luck. I'm just kidding.
Right.
We won't leave you with that. But you know, next week, actually, let me flip to the front and let's see next week's word. Oh, I have so many. Why is it okay? Next week's love is heart, soul, and strength. We did three because it's the famous Shema prayer that's in Deuteronomy chapter 4. No, excuse me, chapter 6. And those three words are also repeated multiple times. Like the passage that you just read in Mark was the same. You know, love the Lord your God with all your mind, soul, strength. All that is in that prayer. So we're going to run through those. And, you know, maybe we might have to break those up, but we'll just see. But you can expect that coming up. But something to leave you with in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 of something you can work on. You know, it says love is patient and love is kind, and love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. So this week, who have you been impatient with? You know, who have you not been kind to? Who have you been jealous of because they got a promotion at work or got, you know, the I don't know, they were the seventh caller on some radio station, and they won the tickets to something, you know. You know, who have you maybe been rude to or talked down to? You know, who have you pushed off because you wanted to do your thing instead of theirs, and so therefore you ignored them because you wanted to do your thing and you thought it was more important than theirs? You know, who have you not forgiven recently? Who have you maybe been irritated with, and to a point that it's bothered you, where it's really gotten on your nerves, you know? Who have you actually had the moment of joy because something bad happened to them? Maybe because you don't like them or something like that, or they did something to you and karma, that's what they get. Who have you done that to? Who have you maybe rejoiced in something that wasn't the truth? There was a lie that's been spread or something like that, or some rumor's been started, and you were like, makes that person look terrible. You know, it's so easy to, I mean, I can find every area where I've done that this week. And it's so easy to do that. And thank goodness, thank God that he loved us first. And so this week, think about how you could work on those. Not an overnight thing at all. So, and you know what? We still always have a Gmail. If you ever want to reach out to us, it's info@coffeeandchrist.com. No one's ever emailed it.
But maybe today's the day.
Maybe today's the day. If you have a question or want some encouragement, feel free to reach out to us. So that's all we got this week.
You know, a great one.
Yeah, have a great week,
guys. Be safe in all that you do.
Absolutely. We love you.
The Lord bless you and keep you.
Yes. Jesus loves you.
See you later.